Lightspeed Venture Partners presents Tomorrow Built Today. You can find details from this episode and more at tbtpodcast.com.
Hello, Lightspeed listeners. So we are very pleased to have Max Levchin, the founder and CEO of a firm, with us today. Max is also the founder of Sci-Fi VC, HVF Labs, more to come on that later, the co-founder and chairman of one of my favorite apps, Glow, and the ex-co-founder and CTO of PayPal. So we are very excited to have you with us today, Max.
Glad to be here.
So I last saw Max at the Wall Street Journal DLive conference. You did a great talk on where credit is broken and how Affirmed plans to fix it. So let's start there, because I know you recently wrote a Medium article on this topic. And as one immigrant to another, you know, who both really battle with trying to understand the many areas that this area is tough, and particularly the, I mean, six different fees that an average US credit card has. Can you just tell the audience your thoughts on where, well, the many areas of where credit is broken in this country?
I think the biggest problem, or the underlying trend that powers all the madness, is the fundamental misalignment of value creation between the customer and the credit provider. In other words, if you think very carefully around simple things like late fees, who actually wants you to be on time and who doesn't? A typical credit card would say, hey, you know, make the minimum payment or there's a late fee. And there are actually two traps embedded in it. One is, a late fee is a source of revenue for the issuing bank. And so they don't really want you to make a payment on time. They would like you to make it just after the late fee was assessed. So fundamentally, that misaligns you and the bank. They have no real financial incentive to tell you, hey, you're late, or you're going to be late, or anything of the sort. In fact, typically for a card issuing bank, any number between 30 to 50% of their profit comes from late fees. And so it's a very important source of revenue. They don't really want you to be on time. Within that little story, there's an even deeper matter, and that's harder to understand, but it's just as important. The notion of a minimum payment is actually only minimum and only valuable to you as a customer from the fact that you are not taking money out of your savings or your checking and putting it towards paying down the card bill. But because the card is a revolving line of credit, the interest is compounding exponentially. What you're doing when you're making the suggested minimum payment is prolonging the time it takes you to get out of debt. So the default payment, the minimum amount that's required by the credit cards, is actually what's also going to maximize the interest and therefore their income. So another example where the incentives of the lender and the borrower are just completely diametrically opposed. And that would, to me, be okay. I'm fundamentally a capitalist, so I don't mind a market-based decision. But as a consumer, you don't really understand what's going on. The deepest misalignment of them all is the lack of information parity, or at least transparency, to the borrower. The borrower believes the provider has their best interest in mind, while they're basically, in some form or another, constantly being charged more than they expect.
And the numbers that you put in your Medium article were really what struck me very hard on this. And you tell me, but I think last year banks made $75 billion on the interest side, but they made more than that, close to $100 billion from all the fees that they're charging us.
There's definitely quite a bit of income attached to the fees. The one that I just quoted a little bit earlier is, to me, the most striking of them all. The idea of a late fee as a slap on the wrist, being told, hey, you really ought to be responsible. Mm. Don't be late. I don't actually have a moral problem with it at all. But what I do think is, you know, fundamentally gotten completely out of hand is this idea of late fees that are arbitrarily adjusted up and up, where you don't fully understand them, that have now become almost half the profits, which means that what is perceived as a free product. The flip side of that statement, obviously, is that they don't really make a whole lot of money in quote-unquote traditional ways anymore. And so what is shown to you as a free product or discounted product or an inexpensive product is then paid for by fees you didn't expect. Hmm. Within that, there's actually another thing that I'm not sure I had time to cover in that article. If you look at things like deferred interest, which is just another way of sort of unexpected, really terrible, very destructive fee, you would find that it impacts people in different credit profiles disproportionately. So if you are high credit worthiness, independently wealthy, or just doing just fine on, in your credit cards, thank you, then you're very unlikely to get hit with the deferred interest fees. If you are in the subprime category, almost a third of you will go from what looked like a zero interest loan to a 29.99 APR in a blink of an eye if you are late with just one payment just by one day.
It's fascinating.
I'm obviously not at all passionate about this topic.
I mean, I share your passion as somebody who came to this country after having worked for a number of years and had a perfect credit score back in England, came here and just could not get credit for the first couple of years of living here. This is something that I struggle with. A lot of our listeners, I'm sure, are currently struggling with this. So we'd love your views on like how this can change.
Well, I think we're trying to change it at Affirm. There are two fundamental things we're doing, and I think two fundamental things the industry has to do. One, we have to embrace technology as means of inclusion. You can use technology to create efficiency. You can use technology to lower your costs, and you can pass those savings on to your best customers. But you don't get to build systems for people that are excluded from credit unfairly, such as new immigrants, people just changed their names, people that have just graduated college. Plenty of groups that have all the reasons in the world to borrow, which put differently is an investment in their future, are told you can't do that. You don't have a FICO score. Like you don't exist. That's really no longer okay as far as I'm concerned, because the typical excuse is, well, you have no credit history and therefore you don't exist, just don't apply. You have such an enormous footprint of information all the way to things that were traditionally hidden from anyone's credit evaluating eye are totally available. Just simply looking at someone's cash flow in their bank account, which is now electronically available, something that a firm does all the time to determine what your cash flow is and therefore determine how much money you could safely borrow and repay back and therefore have access to credit. And so I think that's one side, just creating smarter systems, creating more inclusive systems, using tech to do real-time approvals as opposed to telling someone, why don't you wait for 3 days and we'll get back to you. Instead, we can make it accessible to more people. The other side, and that goes for both those that are in the system already, those that have been kicked out of the system, or those that have yet to find their place in consumer credit, is transparency. Just simply saying, here's what the price of credit will be, here's where you will pay, and here's after that number it stops. So inclusion through technology and transparency through finding a moral compass and sticking to it are the two things the industry can do.
So on this topic, I'm a strong believer that the best brands can summarize where they stand today in one sentence. So if you can speak to your customers and say exactly what a firm stands for in one sentence, what would you say?
That's always a challenging one. I tend to have long, protracted conversations with myself on such topics. But I think we're fundamentally bringing transparency to credit through technology, but also removing stigma of debt from credit. We're ultimately trying to help people invest in their better, smarter, better educated, sharper dressed future selves. What do you want to be next without the stigma and fear of being ripped off?
When I read about a firm on LinkedIn, there's three words that really stand out to me, which are transparency, simple, and trust. And I love that.
That's pretty accurate.
So I was recently actually at LinkedIn being interviewed about their top startup industry disruptor. And of course, you were top of the list. And so a key factor in making this list is where people want to work. So I'd love your views in terms of how you hire and any advice you have for startup founders listening on hiring.
We try to hire people who are intellectually curious and intellectually honest and have the necessary relevant skills and are great to get along with and all the sort of required stuff. But fundamentally, hiring people that are deeply curious about what they're going to do, what they're going to work on, why they're going to work on things, sort of digging into the root of the problem as opposed to just looking for the superficial solution, is something that you can test for by asking, why are they here? You know, what drew them to the conversation? And then watching for superficial kind of a glossy answers versus real ones. You know, somebody asks you, why do you want to work on credit? it's a lot better to hear something like, well, because I screwed up in college and my FICO score dropped and now I want to fix that, which is kind of my motivation in part, versus, oh, you know, it's a world-changing opportunity to create an industry and yada, yada, yada. That, you know, that person is reading from someone else's playbook. And people that can stand up to the challenge of giving a hard answer in the workplace are extremely valuable. And people that are in the workplace, even when hard questions and hard answers are being given, and they have the passion to go through and continue outperforming, is what we're looking for. The number one characteristic I found that applies to everyone I've ever wanted to work with or invest in or partner with is perseverance. So grit, perseverance, tenacity, although they're all kind of the same thing. And the meaning is, as always, it's sort of not the ones who have the brightest ideas or the ones that work the hardest to bring them to life.
Wow. That's something that I feel strongly about. And if I actually think about the people I know, friends of mine who work at a firm, they definitely have a lot of grit.
Good.
So just shifting gears a little bit, because there's outside the world of a firm, there's some other fascinating things that you were working on. So the first podcast that I ever did on that Lightspeed was on fertility. So I'd love to just ask you about the wonderful fertility app that you co-founded and I use every day, Glow. So what was your vision here? And how did you think about the founders and working with them in the early days?
It was actually sort of a collection of happy chances. After my last startup slide, I made a list of things that I really wanted to work on at the industry level. One of the big learnings I had from that one is, despite entertainment and media being very cool and very interesting, it really was not the place for me. I did not enjoy the problems nearly as much as I enjoyed the teams that I had to build and worked with. And so it was a little bit of a kind of like going to class where you love every lab partner, but don't exactly enjoy the topic. I decided I'm going to take it very seriously this time around and make a list of things that I deeply care about and that are big, hairy problems, and see if I can make a difference. And it's a long list, but the top two were finance and healthcare. I thought, well, I know a little bit about finance given PayPal. And so I sort of dug around and a firm came out of that. The other topic that I really was passionate about was healthcare. And so I sat down with a bunch of friends and I said, you know, what do we know about healthcare? It's obviously, everyone around us says it's broken, but let's go a few levels deeper. Find areas where it really is broken, where sort of a, if not life and death, then something where if we make a difference, it will resonate. And hopefully for a lot of people. And up until that point, I knew nothing of matters of fertility or infertility. My wife and I have had kids when we decided to have kids. And it was quite, you know, the pain began after they were born, not before. And so we were sort of talking about it, and infertility became a topic. And we started doing research. And right in the middle of it, one of the guys that was my closest number two at my last company, or one of, I had a few people that I really, really was very close with both personally and professionally during that one, took me aside and said, you know, this is the one for me. That's what I want to work on, because apparently, and I did note before that conversation, his wife and he had the worst trouble conceiving, and
yeah, as is the case with so many couples, right?
Yeah, and sort of, and by then we already knew that the ratio of especially professional women that have to make a decision between career and a child, and just the pain that puts them through and the tension puts them on their relationships with their spouses and their partners is a huge, huge issue. And up until that point, it was sort of very interesting and numerically fascinating. Once I saw Mike sort of tell a story, sort of said, well, I have someone next to me who is on a personal quest to make it easier for others. Like, this company cannot fail. Like, this guy is going to go through walls. And he's given my previous comment on tenacity. If I had to exemplify that word with one person, that would be that guy. And so, as Mike told me, this really matters to me. I'm going to work on this. Like, you're not just going to work on it. This problem is going to crumble as you approach it, because that's what you do. That's the origin of Glow. And I'm still super close with the team. There's a large team in China, and that's where Mike lives. And we built the company around him and his passion. So a majority of the team is in Shanghai. And then there's another fairly sizable team now in the US that helps us stay grounded in our core market, which is still the Western world. But we're also now working in other international locales.
I love the fact that you can use Glow to get pregnant and also not to get pregnant.
That was a feature requested by users.
That is always the best way to introduce something new.
It was literally one of the moments of aha on that one was I was at the World Economic Forum and this very young woman came up to me and said, I have a terrible confession to make. But I don't know exactly who you are and it sounds mysterious. And anyway, so it was sort of slightly awkward. She said, well, I use Glow every day. So that's wonderful. You know, I hope you're successful. She said, no, I'm trying to use it to not be successful, if you know what I mean. And I was like, there might be a market there.
There is definitely a market there. You can capture the people for 10 years when they're not trying to get pregnant and then during the times that they are. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, there are other companies that are in the space. Clue is one that's well-funded. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about like the scalable, repeatable acquisition channel, what do you think has worked so well for you in terms of speaking to new customers?
Probably the single most important thing still has been the community. So from the very beginning and something we carried over from our last work together, Mike and I were very committed to the idea of building a community of users that would share the product with their friends. And so I think we are now by far the largest fertility-oriented community of women. I think we cover probably almost a third of women in the United States alone that are trying to conceive. And so the core user base for us was always women that are very focused at this point in their life of having a child. A lot of them are going through incredible emotional roller coaster. They need folks to talk to, and sometimes they have the friends, which is how we find a lot of our new customers, and sometimes they don't, which is what the community is for. And so the openness and safety of Glow Community attracts people to it, even those that are there not yet trying to conceive. They know that the support group exists. They know they can talk to each other. And so that's been the probably the strongest driver of both discovery as well as retention. People come for the period tracking and they wind up staying for the community.
That's great. I always believe in community being your defensibility moat around anything that you're doing. So Max, you have a fund, one that I love the name of, HVF. And for any listeners that don't know, that stands for hard, valuable, and fun, which all your companies need to be in to, well, need to be solving to be in there. So I especially love that it has one of the hardest working women that I have ever met in your fund, Adina Hafetz, the founder of Divi. So I would love for you just to tell us a little bit more about HVF and the companies such as Divi that are currently in it.
So HVF began as a kind of a vehicle for exploring topics that I'm interested in. So I mentioned looking at finance, looking at healthcare, we looked at energy, we looked at real estate, basically anything that I personally, frankly, had a attraction to and thought I could find interesting people to sit around the table with and brainstorm and see what hasn't been done yet, what should be done better. So as that evolved, and I kind of do the same, this process every time I'm in between companies when I choose what to start next, because in the past it's worked out that not only do I get a company out of it, sometimes my friends wind up walking away with something really cool that I just get to invest in. And so this time around, I formalized it into this HVF vehicle, and it's both a kind of a startup creation lab and a fund. And Sci-Fi VC that you mentioned at one point was just known as HVF Fund, and then we gave it a name. But the companies that are in it are always a reflection of my sort of deepest personal business passions. So I really love the idea of real estate ownership for young people because I think it's an important and challenging task. I really care about fertility, especially now that I found out that one of my closest friends had such terrible troubles, and he and another 250,000 couples in this country. Another area I'm very interested about intellectually, although I know less, is insurance. And so we're looking at insurance topics. We try to stay away from concepts that are top of everyone's mind. So we're not super deep in AI for AI's sake, as far as conversations or investing goes. But anytime we run into an interesting AI solution to one of the world's biggest problems, then we get very, very excited about it and do lots of work to understand whether it's a backable and interesting idea or just a really cool hammer for hammer's sake. It's in many ways, now that I'm more than full-time running a firm, it's now run by another wonderful friend of mine named Ben. He spends all of his time doing what I just described. And every week when I have time with him, it's kind of an intellectual oasis where I get to run away from the day-to-day of a firm and listen about things that are going to cure cancer or take us to the next planet.
And let's finish by talking about one of those companies. So for the listeners that don't know, Divvy, D-I-V-V-Y, is in the real estate market that Max mentioned that he's very excited about. So they are fractionalizing home ownership. I would encourage everybody to check them out. It's great, especially in the Bay Area where home prices are just pricing so many people out of the market. So Max, tell us a little bit about Divvy and what gets you excited there.
The short version is, as you described, it's essentially... The fancy way of saying it is fractionalizing homeownership. The relatable way of saying it, perhaps, is helping people buy houses where they couldn't possibly dream of affording one. And there's a bunch of different markets. Bay Area is one example where lots of people are wealthy and still few can afford a house because the market is really run up very, very high. There are plenty of other markets where people aren't especially wealthy and the house ownership isn't a huge barrier to someone with a Bay Area salary, Bay Area savings, but to the local community, it's still, for a lot of people, out of price range. And so creating a vehicle where Divvy matches essentially a way of owning a house that is affordable to a consumer that really wants to build their family in a permanent home, it's a very societally improving idea. And so it's a sort of a combination of... real estate fund and sophisticated financial instrument and some very clever ideas in risk management and underwriting and the community where people that they serve have a incredibly high opinion of the company, which is not a surprise since they're placing them into their first home most of the time.
So everything from fintech to healthcare to real estate, you are really keeping yourself busy and in ways that are certainly enhancing people's lives. On that note, I'm going to let you get back to running the business. And Max, thank you so much for being here today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
This podcast is produced by Lightspeed Venture Partners. For more details on this episode, head over to tbtpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.